been at the Chicago Fest, and John Primer was sound checking for the Muddy Waters band.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up to him, you know, because I was little. I was like probably 10, 11 years old or something like that. And I went up to him because he looked like my sister's husband. And I went up to him like, what are you doing with the guitar in your hand? You know, they looked like identical twins then. And then he go, because I'm playing here. And then I hear his voice go, whose son is that? And I turned around and it's Muddy Waters. And he put his hands on my head and he shook my head. He said, you got a nice head of hair there, young man. And all I'm thinking was this man with this big old hand shaking my head. And I look in retrospect like, wow, man, you know, that was the man that changed music forever.
Hey, everybody, Mike Jeffers, and welcome to Open Mic, the show where I talk to musicians about the business, about their careers, and about anything else. It's kind of like a jam session. That's why we call it Open Mic. And today I am very excited to be talking to the great Wayne Baker Brooks. He is on the main stage at the Blues Fest Thursday, the kickoff night, June 8th, Prixter Pavilion, 5:30 to 6:20. The Wayne Baker Brooks Band will be up there on stage performing live. I know you've played the Blues Fest with your father, with your brother, with different bands, with all-star casts. This is the first time you're actually playing and playing on your own with your own band, right?
Yeah, and I'm proud and honored, man, to be able to play at home on one of the biggest stages in the world. So it's an honor, man.
You know, that's the thing. I don't think a lot of people that are blues fans in Chicago understand the Chicago blues worldwide.
Yes.
And this is the largest free blues festival in the world.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, everybody takes it for granted. Oh, it's Blues Fest. But this is a big deal. If you weren't living in Chicago and you were flying in for this thing, you couldn't believe the people that are playing on this festival because you guys go out of the country and you're like hailed like kings, right? So, I mean, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're on the main stage and on the kickoff night, it's going to be something pretty special.
Yeah, man, people come from all over the globe, man, to come to the Blues Fest because they love Chicago blues. The style is so infectious, man, that you know, we could be playing somewhere where they don't even know English, but they know the words to the song.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, talk a little bit about your background. Now, your father, the great Lonnie Brooks, right? And growing up with a father who's like a blues legend and at that point, just a blues legend. I mean, he lived for many, many years after that. You played with him for many years. But talk a little bit about who was coming through the house, who was hanging out at the house when you were growing up. That had to be a huge influence, but it was probably just normal, right? It was just like,
people like Luther Allison, Coco Taylor, Eddie the Chief Clearwater. You know, we would see, you know, Buddy Guy and Junior Wells every now and then, you know, around the neighborhood. And, you know, those were my dad's friends, you know, and we had no idea who they were. You know, he would take me to, like, you know, go see Muddy Waters with Johnny Winters, you know, and you know, at the Chicago Fest, man. And, you know, we had no idea, like, you know, who they were. And when I look in retrospect, it's like, man, these people are the ones that changed music forever, man.
Well, and I think let's give people a little glimpse into this, too, because it wasn't like your father took you to go see this show at Chicago Fest, and you guys stood like in the middle of the thing with a bunch of people. You were backstage, I'm sure.
Backstage.
And you just, but it was like nothing. It was normal for you, right?
Yeah. I remember being at the Chicago Fest, and John Primer was sound checking for the Muddy Waters band.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up to him, you know, because I was little, I was like probably 10, 11 years old or something like that. And I went up to him because he looked like my sister's husband. And I went up to him like, what are you doing with the guitar in your hand? You know, they looked like identical twins then. And then he go, because I'm playing here. And then I hear his voice go, whose son is that? And I turned around and it's Muddy Waters. And he put his hands on my head and he shook my head. He said, "You got a nice head of hair there, young man." And all I'm thinking was this man with this big old hand shaking my head. And I look in retrospect like, wow, man, you know, that was the man that changed music forever. You know, I can't believe it that, you know, he like grabbed my head.
I always am curious because, I mean, you know, meeting sons of legends and then going on and becoming, you know, an incredible musician yourself. But growing up with these guys, Muddy Waters, right, to be one of them, or the Chief or any of them, you got to know them as people before you even cared about whether or not they could play, which
Absolutely.
Is different than most people. Most people hear them playing, then maybe if they get a chance to meet them, then it's a different story. Yeah. But that probably changed your perspective, too.
Well, you know, Buddy Guy's first wife, Joanne, was really good friends with my mom. They were like best friends. And you're right, you know, we would see them as people. But the first time I saw Buddy was like at the old Limelight, I think you want to call it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a private event for Mayor Harold Washington. And Buddy was just up there ripping. Him and Junior Wells were up there ripping, and me and my dad was walking through the hall to get to while they were playing, and my dad was holding my hand, and I'm like 10, 11 years old, and I go, "Dad, who is that?" And he go, "Oh, that's Buddy Guy." And I said, "Man, I like him, man." And my dad go, "Oh, you don't like my stuff?" I said, "Daddy, I love your stuff, but I like him." And then it connected like, oh, that's, you know, mama's friend's husband, you know. So, yeah, they were people first.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you first pick up a guitar? I mean, you're around it all the time, but, I mean, sometimes people, kids are around instruments, and they're like, "That's my dad's. I don't even want to mess with that."
Well, he did tell us to not mess with his guitars, really? Yeah. Like when we were really young. And but how I got into guitar, you know, I started playing drums first.
Ah, okay.
So, like, a lot of the demos that my dad would make at home, he would have me and Ronnie on the demos. I would play the drum patterns on pots and pans with spoons and knives. And Ronnie would be keeping the bass line for him on the guitar.
Wow.
So he would tell me, "Keep that beat, stay right there," you know, and he'd think of words, he'd come up with lyrics, and, you know, he had his groove.
Yep.
And sometimes me and Ronnie would chime in, and he'd go, "Oh, no," and then he'd go, "Oh, I like that," you know, and, and you know, that's how, he made it fun for us. He made it to where he used it against us, like, "Go do your homework first," wash the dishes first.
Yeah.
So we can get back to playing with Dad, you know.
Yeah.
So he made it fun for us. And so after high school, I started touring with him, 1988.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became his stage tech, his guitar tech. And so by me, like, drum tech as well, but by me messing with his guitar, getting the sounds together and everything, it felt natural.
Ah, yeah.
So one day I told him after a gig, on the way home, I was driving, and I said, "Dad, I want to play guitar." He's like, "What?" He said, "What's wrong with the drums?" And I said, "Man, you know, it's just something about the guitar." So he's like, "All right, wait till we get home." So he gave me his guitar, and he took another guitar, and he was like, "Well, do this." And he bent the note, and I bent it just like him. And then he was like, "Whoa." And then he said, "All right, well, do this." And he bent it, and then he bent it again, you know, like a three-note thing. And I did it exactly the same way he did. And he was like, "Wow." He's like, "All right, well, do this." And he did a run. And I did it the same exact way. He was like, "Oh, man, you got this, man."
Wow.
He said, "You got this." And then I became self-taught after that.
Yeah.
But it killed his dream. His dream was me on drums, Ronnie on bass, and we go out as a trio. So one day we was playing Detroit, the Detroit Blues Festival, and Albert King was there, and he knew I loved Albert King, man. I love me some Albert King. And he went up to Albert, he was like, "Man, they messing up my dream, man. Ronnie done switched the guitar from bass. Now he's switching from drums to guitar. And then he said, talk to him, man, because I know he loves you. So Albert King pulled me. He said, come to my office with his pipe. And it was the tent, you know, at the Blues Fest. And he go, sit down, son. He said, now, your daddy tell me that you want to play guitar. He said, but he wants you to play the drums. He said, how you feel about that? I said, Mr. King, I love the guitar. I love the way it feel. I said, I want to play just like you and my dad. He was like, oh, okay. He said, can I say what he said?
Sure.
He said, all right, well, you know, he had his pipe. He go, well, you know, a guitar player come a dime a dozen. So if you're going to play the guitar, play the fuck out that. Man, he shouldn't have told me that. Because, all right, so I was so geeked up after that. And I could, you know, I went back, you know, to setting up the stage and everything. And as I was walking, my dad was waiting for him to tell him, you know, he's like, what'd he say? He was like, well, Lonnie, look like you got another guitar player, man. He did his signature laugh. And man, that stays in my heart,
man.
That stays in my heart every time I play a note of my dad and Albert King and BB, you know, who we toured with a lot too,
sure.
As well. You know, I used to call him Uncle B, you know, and I was his joke master. I would give him, like, you know, new jokes,
yeah.
You know, and everything. And so that's when I switched from drums to guitar.
Yeah.
It was like,
well, I'm glad you did.
Yeah. Well, also at the same time, man, I felt like that I can carry on his legacy more with the guitar and songwriting, yeah, than I could with drums. No disrespect to drummers, because I know drummers can, you know, sing and write as well,
right,
too. But for me, you know, being self-taught, not musically trained, just, you know, gathering stuff from around the house, my dad records and tapes and stuff like that, I felt like, you know, I could speak more with the guitar than I can with the drums,
yeah,
and get my emotions out, you know, because, you know, I was a wild child, you know, for a while, man, and playing the guitar soothed the hell out of my soul. So, you know, that's when I went from drums to guitar,
yeah,
you know.
Found your voice. You found your calling,
yeah,
really.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Because speaking of that, I thought I was Michael Jordan for a while, man. I thought I was good, you know. And, you know, I broke my ankle. And I had to stop for a while and, you know, recuperate.
Yeah.
And then I broke the ankle again.
Uh-oh.
And then, to me, that was like God saying, man, this is not for you, man. Pick that guitar up.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I, yeah, you know, picked up music again, like, you know, banging on the drums and,
yeah,
touring with my dad.
Yeah.
Got my books in order, got high grades in English. That's why I love writing, you know.
Well, so talk a little bit about forming your own band and what people can expect to hear at the Blues Fest. Because I love how you just set your whole background up, and now everybody knows where you came from and how it's ingrained in your system. But you're different than your dad, obviously. You've,
yeah,
got your own sound, you've got your own tunes, you've got your own vibe and everything happening. I mean, how did you, it's got to be a little bit difficult. Well, maybe not, I don't know. You tell me how you didn't just go down the road and just say, I'm just going to play just like my dad, and I'm going to do my dad's tunes, and that's what, I know you still do some, but you have your own stuff, too, and you have your, yeah, own sound.
Well, not to, you know, disrespect or put anything out on anybody, but I remember my dad, you know, talking to my brother while he was preparing himself to play in my dad's band and, mm-hmm, everything. So he would come up on 2 or 3 songs a night just to prep him, you know. And one night, you know, we got home, he was getting on Ronnie, like, hey, man, you playing the same thing I'm playing. Don't do that. People are paying to see me. They don't want to see someone else trying to do me while I'm on the stage with you. So,
right,
he said, be yourself.
Yeah.
He said, do your own thing. And that rang with me, man. That stayed with me. And I was just getting into guitar. So that was the perfect moment for me to take something, a piece of knowledge from my dad, like a gift almost to like, hey, this is what you got to do to succeed. And I went straight into writing my own stuff from there, like, and coming up with my own, you know, things, my own riffs, and it annoyed the hell out of them, but for a while it did, and, you know, but I'm glad I stuck with it, man.
It's
stayed me.
Difficult for an artist to find their own voice and to just say, this is what I'm going to do, but you certainly did. So playing on the Blues Fest, June 8th, 5:30 to 6:20. You're on the kickoff night, man, Thursday night.
I feel like the Grand Mount Marshal, man.
How about it? How about it? So what can people expect to hear? I know you're dropping new singles all the time on your website, which I should mention, WayneBakerBrooks.com. We'll send everybody over there. We'll link it all up below. Yeah. And you're dropping new singles, which means you're constantly writing and everything. Yeah, I mean, what are people going to get to hear? Because you've got a short set. I mean, it's
it's
a couple
short,
hours.
So it's condensed, man. You know, throughout my set, I like to let people know where I'm from, where I'm at, and where I'm going musically.
Yeah.
So I take them on a musical journey, and usually it's stuff, you know, like I'm going to do a few of my dad's songs because, you know, a lot of people come up to me, man, crying after I do my dad's songs because they miss him so much. Yeah. And for a while, I didn't include my dad because I wanted to be me.
Right.
But now I feel like, you know, to carry that legacy on, they got to know where I'm from.
Yeah.
They got to know where I'm going, and they got to know where I'm, you know, where I'm at and where I'm going.
Right.
So I thought it was essential for me to include my dad, Muddy Waters, Elmore James, and, you know, like, and that's my long set. So I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I let them know where I'm from with my dad and those guys, and then I start on my stuff, which is where I'm at now, and then take them where I'm going, you know, musically.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a heck of a set. It's going to be a heck of a blues fest. We've got an incredible blues fest.
Oh, man, I'm so excited. I cannot wait, man.
Well, this is going to be back like normal Blues Fest, right, for 2023. Yeah. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Of course, everybody go check out WayneBakerBrooks.com. Wayne, thank you so much for coming in, man.
Thank you,
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thank you all for watching. And as I always say, all the information's at bluesfestguide.com and, of course, chicagojazz.com. And until next time, hopefully I will see someone out on the scene.